That's year. It's March 24, 1983, and this is the second cassette in continuation of the various remarks on different visits to Baba for David Fenster. This may possibly overlap certain of the material towards the latter part of the first cassette, as of course I'm not just exactly sure where that one ended off, and the one which was lost then took up. At any rate, I'll start more or less at the beginning of the various matters concerning the use of drugs, especially by young people, that came up quite concentratedly during my later visits to Baba in India. I remember that on an early one of these, already Baba had been in quite a good deal of correspondence with young people in the United States. There were, in particular, various exchanges of letters with Alan Cohen, who at that time was in Boston, and two other names began to come into the subject also, Rick Chapman and Robert Dreyfus. I was aware of correspondence between Baba and these people because certain of his letters to them were copied, and I was asked to read over what Baba was saying on the subject and to familiarize myself a little bit with what was going on. To be perfectly honest, while I realized from press reports that there was an increasing problem with drugs, and particularly with LSD at that time, my own personal life, as far as I knew, touched absolutely no one involved in this sort of a problem. As a consequence, I was a bit bored even having to take the time to read copies of some of the correspondence, and I must admit, tucked it back into a far corner of my mind. But on one of the earlier trips in the 1960s, Baba said that a young fellow by the name of Robert Dreyfus had come, and he had been en route hitchhiking for several months, as a matter of fact, and as a consequence had missed out on the news that Baba had canceled a large open public meeting. I can't remember at this point just which one it was. It might have been an earlier version of the East-West Gathering or a later version of it. In any case, when Robert Dreyfus ended up in India, Baba was at that point in quite deep seclusion, and it was, as I recall, more or less by Adi Sr.'s intercession that Robert got to see Baba. At any rate, I'm sure, David, that you have that information direct from Robert, so I needn't speculate about it here. Baba mentioned, had Arish go over in quite some detail the conversation with Robert, and Baba asked me to be sure to meet him as I went back through Bombay. If I recall correctly, Robert was staying for several days with Arnavaz and Naramandatta Chanji at their apartment in Bombay. Even then, with that direct contact with Baba and the beginning of an association of faces and so on with Robert Dreyfus, the subject still completely left me cold. It wasn't long after that when four rather bearded young hippies knocked on the Sufi door in San Francisco and I had an emergency telephone call from Murshida that she didn't quite know what to do with them and could I take them on. And I got a little closer to the subject. These four fellows were rather typical of the time, long hair, quite bearded, rather careless in dress, but I don't mean by that careless insofar as cleanliness was concerned, because there, on that point, they, as is true of so many of the hippies in those days, were very careful about matters of personal cleanliness. At any rate, we chatted at quite some length. The material interested them very greatly. They had been attracted, as I recall, by some verses of Anayat Khan, and some of them knew just a little bit about Meher Baba, and so they wanted to come back and talk further. We did that several times in my own private flat, and then as the matter seemed to go on endlessly, I suggested that we actually try to do it, our exchanges, in a more formalized and regularized fashion, and proposed that we have one evening a week, an hour, hour and a half together, and go over the background of Baba's basic teachings and mysticism in general in a fairly systematic fashion. That led to a whole series of introductory three-month weekly sessions with a whole series of young people, I think in very short order. There must have been 100, perhaps even 200 young people go through those groups, a surprising number of whom then elected to become Sufi initiates. So all this started going on in San Francisco to familiarize me, at least with the so-called hippies and dropouts. But oddly enough, the subject of drugs and LSD came up very, very little. Apparently these people had experimented with drugs, mostly as an avenue of approach to a very, very deep inner compulsion to get on with inner development and to find truth and to find meaning and value in life. I very quickly came to respect, admire, and deeply love them very rapidly. On another trip, as I began to be familiar with the scene in San Francisco through these young people and received more of Baba's copies of correspondence, I was in India, again, towards the end of a very deep seclusion of Baba's, and we were sitting in Mandalay Hall when all of a sudden I noticed Baba look up from his gestures with a sharp look of irritation, and then he went on gesturing, and then he looked at Erish again, and he looked very concerned and motioned to Erish to go out the door. Personally, I didn't know what it was that had distracted Baba, but Baba went on gesturing, and somebody else carried on the interpretation of his gestures for me. Finally, Erish came back, whispered in Baba's ear. Baba sort of put up both hands with the palms up in the gesture of slightly despairing, well, what do we do about all this? His typical gesture that he used so frequently. And Erish sort of waggled his head and talked on. I don't know what language they were talking in, but I couldn't understand Erish. And then Baba looked over towards me to bring me into the conversation, made some gestures, and had Erish explain to me. And it turned out that here was a young fellow who had just ridden out on the back of the putt-putt bicycle behind the postman, a young fellow who had heard of Baba in Miami Beach, wanted to meet Baba. He had hitchhiked, doing various jobs on board different ships via Tokyo and Hong Kong, and finally gotten to Bombay, had come up on his own again, hitchhiking through Pune to Adi Senior's office. Adi Senior felt sorry for them, and although he explained to the young fellow that Baba was in deep seclusion, would see no one, still Adi, with that sort of derring-do, of his decided to take the chance and ship the boy out to Marizod and see what happened. Well, this did thoroughly annoy Baba, and Baba, after Arish had explained all of this to me, then gesticulated, saying, Adi knows that Baba is in deep seclusion, that he's given absolutely strict instructions, that nobody is to disturb him, and yet he sends this boy out. Now, all that Baba can do is send him back and send him halfway around the world back home. And Baba looked thoroughly annoyed and just downright decided on all of this. As Baba described this to me and his decision that the boy would have to go back home, it was just as if a sharp dagger pierced my heart, and I felt an excruciating personal pain, and I must admit at the same time a deep feeling of annoyance with Baba himself. I hope Baba will forgive me for that, but I know that he knew the rare occasions when this would happen to me. So, as always happened in a situation like that, when an absolutely unthinkable thought went across my mind, Baba looked immediately sharply into my eyes, and clapped his hands and gestured, "Don, what are you thinking about?" "Well, you know, you just can't tell the avatar that, well, Baba, I was thinking that you really are a terrible stinker to let that boy do all of that and not take pity on him." So, although I suppose if there had been a printout of the electric circuits in my mental body, that's about what would have been printed out, nevertheless, this hopeless editorial function, especially in Stevens, that wants to try to be polite and diplomatic at any price, insisted on reinterpreting and trying to gloss over the worst of what was going on in my own mind. So I said to Baba in response to his question, "Well, Baba, I was thinking, what right do I have to sit here at your feet?" Baba instantly, of course, even before the words formed and came out of my mouth, knew exactly what I was thinking and what was going on in my heart. So Baba brightened up, smiled, clapped his hands, gestured to Arish, and said, "Go out and tell the boy to come in." So the boy, whose name was Stephen Simon, did come in. Baba asked him various questions. The boy was on drugs. He freely admitted it. Baba asked him if he had tried to stop. The boy said that he had tried to stop several times, but each time had gone back on. They exchanged quite a lengthy series of personal questions and answers. Baba asked the boy a good bit about his life, his personal background. And then Baba had Arish summarize for Steve Simon pretty much the sort of things that he had been writing in letters back, especially to the boys in Massachusetts. When all of this was done, Baba made the boy promise that he would do his best to get off drugs. Whenever he had any temptation to use one, he would try to think of Baba and put the thought of drugs aside. Baba asked him whether he had any money to get back to the United States. The boy said he had absolutely nothing. Baba, as usual in such a circumstance, looked over at Mayor G and said, "Mayor G, do you have anything?" Mayor G pulled out a great big wad of bills and showed it to Baba, and Baba said, "We'll give the boy, I think it was 120 rupees, and he can use that at least to get a simple hotel in Bombay and perhaps find some sort of a job aboard a ship to get back again." Then Baba looked at me and said, "Now, Don, I want you to stay in touch with this boy. You're both from the United States, and just be sure to give him a helping hand." So I believe, as I recall, that the boy had no fixed address, so I gave him my address and expected him to write to me. Well, I was flitting back and forth between Europe and San Francisco in those days, and when I finally came back to the United States, expected promptly, because the boy had heard all of this instruction that he and I were to stay in touch, expected to find a letter from him. None came. Well, it was some months after that. It might even have been a year or two when the next chapter of the Stephen Simon story fitted in. In these introductory series that I was giving to many, mostly young hippie dropouts at the Sufi Center in San Francisco, there was a crowd that came up from near Santa Cruz. That was the group in which a number of those perfectly wonderful persons, such as Cindy Ceteris and her husband, and the Edies, Jot Edie and his wife, Priscilla and Douglas Martin, a number of others would come up. And it might have been the second or the third time after they had started coming to one of the introductory groups. Douglas Martin looked at me suddenly afterwards as we were saying goodbye and they were preparing to drive back to Santa Cruz. He said, "Don, you know, I just have the instinct to tell you about something that happened to me when I was still back over in Honolulu beachcombing." He said, "One day at lunchtime, I went into sort of a vegetarian cafeteria not far from the waterfront, which I liked, and I was sitting there eating. There weren't many people around, and I noticed that a young fellow over near a window looked at me, and all of a sudden he seemed to become very impatient, jumped up, came over to my table, and began to tell me that he had just met the Christ, the avatar of the age, and that he had told him to get off of drugs." And Douglas went on, described the boy, and I said to him, "Do you remember his name, where he lives?" And he said, "Yes, his name is Stephen Simon." And he gave me his address and said if I ever wanted to know, I could write to him and he'd tell me more about the avatar, Mayor Baba. But he was my first introduction to the name Mayor Baba. And I said, "Good heavens, Stephen Simon. I can't tell you how relieved I am, because I've been trying to get in touch with that boy for months now to trace him, because I met him in India in Baba's presence, and Baba told us to stay in touch, and I've never heard from him." So at any rate, I believe it was at that point that Steve Simon was living for some time in New York, and thanks to Douglas Martin's address, I got in touch with him. We did remain in touch for some period of time after that, and then, as so often happened to Steve Simon, he just disappeared, and this time disappeared from the face of the globe. I heard a few little reports from other people from time to time, but I was never able to catch up with him again. So that was my second contact directly with Baba on the subject of drugs. The third was, as I recall, the last time that I saw Baba, it was just shortly after that one that Rick Chapman was allowed by Baba to break into Baba's seclusion on the one occasion that Rick also was able to be in his presence. It was on one of these occasions that I rather jokingly said to Baba, "Gee whiz, you know, I seem to be getting more and more entangled into these young people's lives, and so many of them have had drug experiences that have been terribly important to them. I think, Baba, in order to know much about the subject, I'm going to have to try a trip myself." Of course, I meant all of this rather jokingly. Maybe I meant it half seriously, but I don't think if I ever had gotten down to it, I would even have dreamed of having taken a pill and gone on a trip. I just think it's something that if I had thought more about it, I would never have gotten anywhere closer to it. But, you know, every once in a while, you try to make a little bit of joking banter with the avatar, and if you're at all like myself, always fell flat on your nose and skinned it badly and felt like an utter fool for what you had tried to do. But at any rate, for better or for worse, Baba, just as soon as I said that, reared back in his seat, bristled, and lightning flared from his eyes, and he said, "Don, don't even think of such a thing." And then he went on to say, you do not understand the sort of consequences that this can have on different individuals' nervous systems." He said, "Yes, it is true that one individual may make 100 or even 200 trips without any permanent substantial damage to his nervous system. Baba went on and said, however, another person of a different temperament, of a different nervous setup, and just one trip can be absolutely, permanently, irretrievably damaged or destroyed. So he said, Don, don't even think in jest of such a thing. Well, obviously, Baba was using this little attempted humor on my part to get home, once again, direct from the avatar, the terribly serious consequences that can arise. Then Baba went on and tried to describe to me a little bit the manner in which, for instance, a material such as LSD functioned on the nervous system. And he pointed out that at a maximum, all that a drug of that sort could do would be to open up certain nerve centers, which under normal circumstances in spiritual development open naturally themselves, and one has access to them, but the whole episode is unimportant and has very little to do with spirituality. It's an absolute byproduct of it. And as Baba was trying to explain how these nerve centers function and open up naturally and what LSD or things of that sort do to it, he tried to get a symbol, tried to get Erish to interpret in some fashion or another something symbolical for me to understand the artificial manner in which LSD functioned. And the closest that he got, but even that wasn't close enough and was not satisfying to Baba, and finally he abandoned it, but the closest that he got to it was the symbol of trying to use something like a crowbar on a very, very fine, beautifully workman door, and trying to open it with a crowbar rather than a normal light pass key. But even this did not satisfy Baba and his sense of the enormous risk of permanent damage that one was likely to run into. Incidentally, it was during that period that back in San Francisco I inherited the job that Baba wanted done of collating various of the different letters that he had sent to people on drugs to put them together in a systematic fashion and to get that out in booklet pamphlet form. As I say, I inherited that job. Baba sent me along some more material and I put it together, edited it, and then finally decided that since that was all pretty don't do this, don't do that sort of material, I decided to append at the end a briefing and an extracting of the main outlines of what Baba tells us positively about the origin and the purpose of creation. So that all became the pamphlet God in a Pill. There is one very interesting episode in that. That was that after the first small edition had come out, one of the young people said to me, well, Don, in this, you didn't include in the list of drugs that Baba forbids hashish. Why isn't it in there? I said, well, I never heard Baba specifically talk about it. And so all of the other things that are here are listed in various of Baba's letters or in conversation and so on. But I've never heard him forbid hashish. And so the person looked a bit abashed and then just a little bit defiant nevertheless and said, well, Don, it's such an important point. Mightn't it be well to double-check Baba on it before this goes too far? And I said, I'm perfectly willing to. So I wrote to Monty immediately and got a letter back at once that Baba had definitely said that hashish must be included in the list of drugs absolutely prohibited. So that specific item was checked very carefully with Baba. I did go into my own personal investigations on this subject in Lebanon just 2-3 years later and found out from all sources that I checked there that, in their opinion, a cultured, well-educated, open Lebanese, that Baba's viewpoint, from their standpoint, is totally justifying. At any rate, we should never labor under any illusions that Baba gave some sort of a special position in relation to hashish. Well, so much for the various different contacts with drugs. I could certainly see as the years went along that why it was that Baba dragged me into the question of drugs. It's been extremely interesting to me that in the vast majority of the cases of young people attracted to Baba, while a very great many of them have been on drugs, with a very small number of exceptions, each individual has voluntarily, spontaneously given up taking drugs on his own. It has been in the rarest of situations where I have sat down, and usually at the request of the person themselves, and discussed at some length the question of drugs. It has almost always seemed as if, in contrast to prying them away, as if their deep longing and urge, their seeking after truth, which in many cases led them towards drugs, when it is satisfied, just as naturally leads them away from drugs. There is, of course, also the pain factor, because it's perfectly true that another very goodly percentage of young people who have become involved with drugs have done so because of what I've just called a pain factor, the just enduring, day by day, finally unbearable pain of life itself as they experienced it, the lack of love, the lack of companionship, the lack of honesty, of being supported, of being cared for in life. And as this wears along, one's resistance seems to wear out in many individuals' cases. So drugs, for a surprising number of people, become something of an opiate, something to deflect or to camouflage this deep sense of pain. But again, as so frequently happens, as Baba supplies value in a sense of sustainment and warmth and love, then again, spontaneously, the need for them is dropped away. It was on one of these last trips in the 1960s when I went in roughly a weekend from Tokyo down to Ahmednagar and back up. I believe I had one or two days at the latter, at the end of a week, which were free, and the weekend itself, and it looked like just enough time. I can't remember, David, if I recorded this particular episode on the previous cassette, so I am going to record it here, and forgive me if it is just needless repetition, but I want to be sure that it is on record. On that occasion, as always, I would send a letter, if there was time, or a cable, to let Baba know that business, one way or another, would make a window for a visit to Baba if he would allow it. And on that occasion, as always, Baba promptly replied to come. On occasion, he would say words to the general effect of just for 1 hour, or just for 3 minutes, or just for an afternoon. But in one way or another, Baba always broke his own rules, and the 3 minutes would turn into hours or days, and the one day would turn into several days or the better part of a week. So while Baba always put the fear of Baba into one, still it was always followed up by that enormous love, warmth, elasticity. On this occasion, though, it was business commitments which would allow me only to arrive in Bombay terribly early on a morning, and have to depart. I think I had to make a call in Delhi on business. Can't quite remember, but at any rate, as all of it worked out, there was only a chance to catch a taxi direct up to Ahmednagar from the airport in the early part of the day, spend the middle of the day, and go back down to Bombay Airport late in the day and go on. So I hired a taxi and hired him to stand by during the time that Baba would allow me to be with him during the middle of the day. Baba was involved with a crowd of people at that point, and as I arrived and people looked a bit curiously at me, Baba explained that I was an American devotee who was on business in the Far East and had come just for that specific day to have a quick glimpse of Baba. Baba was certainly not beyond, doing a bit of stage acting in order to impress people if he felt that it was necessary for whatever he was trying to accomplish with him. So on this occasion, he went on and led me on, said, "Well, Don, how'd you get here?" And I said, "Well, I had to hire a taxi, Baba." And Baba looked sort of a little shocked, although he knew all about it. Sort of as if he were pursing his lips to whistle about all the money that was going down the drain that way. And "And is he standing by?" And I said, "Oh, yes." And he said, "And so you'll take the same taxi down this evening?" And Baba said, "Well, my, that must cost $100, $200, doesn't it?" I said, "Yes, Baba, that's just about it." And Baba looked over at the visitors who were duly impressed because especially in those days, $100, $200 translated into rupees was quite a tidy little sum of money. So then Baba went on, looked at his visitors and said, "Don would do anything that I asked him to do." And then Baba looked at me and gestured and said, "In fact, he'd go jump over a cliff if I asked him to. Wouldn't you, Don?" He looked very sharply at me, and I looked way down inside of my stomach and my heart and gulped and thought, "God, would I?" And then I thought, "Gee, I've taken that vow." When Baba took over Sufism Reoriented, the vow of absolute honesty, what am I going to say to this? And then I saw that I couldn't leave that question long hanging in the air before I made a reply. And so I just neutralized all of the question marks and the cavities running around in the inside of me in my mind, and just plunged into an answer and hoped that somewhere or another Baba would make it good for me, and said, "Yes, I would." But just wondering deeply inside of myself how Baba would follow up on that. But it was typical of the way Baba, every once in a while, would put one to crisis, make you face up to things that normally you would rather not. And here in a public situation, I really had to do some fast meeting of crisis with a lot of things flying around in my mind very, very rapidly. Well, on the last trip that I did make in late 66, although at that time I didn't know that it would be the last one to see Baba in the body, as always, it was wonderful, warm, fulfilling. I don't remember the specific things that went on. I believe, amongst other things, that Baba had Francis read out, as he so often did when I would come for a visit, one of the ghazals that Francis was composing on a theme suggested by Baba. Beautiful, lovely things of that sort. Sometimes Baba would discuss, longer-term, more business matters. On one or two occasions, when I arrived, he had papers on his knees and a look of some intensity and severity. I remember on one of these, He even got out the one and only time that I ever saw him with his black horn-rimmed spectacles. He would put them on and look at the papers on his knee and get irritated and take off the spectacles. And then he would have Arish try to tell me what was in the papers, and then he would get bothered with Arish and try to put his spectacles back on. It was a draft of his last will and testament and the trust deed, of which, of course, we know the contents now, which had been drafted up by Ramju Abdullah. Baba was complaining about how difficult it was to get the idea over to Ramju and to get Ramju to use just exactly the right words and get it all down, get it to press. I don't know, it was years later when all of the kerfuffle cropped up with Kutumbha Shastri that I realized that Baba did that at least for one future, immediate, very good reason, and that was to be able to say directly to Kutumbha Shastri, yes, I know that this material was given out, dictated by Baba himself and carefully reviewed. Because part of Kutumbha Shastri's argument about trying to overrule all of the rest of the trustees was his feeling that he was not bound by any part of the trust deed's instructions or rules or regulations, that he, Kutumbha Shastri, had been given a direct assignment by Baba and that overruled everything else. So at any rate, one often wondered at the time why Baba would do something or another, and only years later have it clarified. I suppose many of these things will be clarified in future lifetimes. At any rate, on this last and final visit to Baba after all of the lovely and warming things that went on, finally it was time to leave. And most of the time, after Baba would stand and Oparvardigar would be recited, I think usually by Francis, with Baba at any rate standing and supported on Francis's left arm, then Baba normally would walk, still supported by Francis, out of the large double door of Mandali Hall towards Mara's garden and across the garden and up the steps to the house. On this occasion, however, he insisted that I support him, walk with him. This had only happened once before, on the occasion when Carrie and Joseph Harb came and were taking photographs, and it scared the life out of me. It also scared me a bit this time, but I promised myself that I would be less frightened of the possibility of making a stumble or a wobble and causing Bobby any pain or possibly even danger. So we walked across to the steps. Bobby embraced me. As he started to turn, he snapped his fingers, embraced me a second time. That was unusual. And I thought, good heavens, what have I done to merit all of this extra special attention? Then I knew that I must leave, and because I couldn't leave Baba there long, because the women would not come out to support him and to take him inside until I was not around to be seen. So I started walking briskly back to Mandali Hall, feeling that I had long overstayed my invitation and probably by this time was causing the avatar great pain and having to stand unsupported for this length of time. But as I started to walk back, somebody shouted from the open doors to Mandali Hall, Baba's calling to you. And I looked around, and Baba had turned and was looking back at me, snapping his fingers again and beckoning to me. He wanted to embrace me again. And so I went back as quickly as I could and walked up to the top of the stairs. And he embraced me several times again, then snapped his fingers and made this sort of circular motion in midair with his hand, indicating, all right, now go on, get on with it. And I went back to Mandali Hall. I remember the thought passing my mind, just sort of a little quick photocopy. Goodness, Baba's acting almost as if this would be our last time together. But immediately I dismissed the thought, because already there were all of the plans that were starting to formulate for the great Darshan for early 1969. Baba would start bringing these things up, and, you know, it just never occurred to me that anything could happen to interfere with such an important event planned by Baba himself. But it was the last time in the physical body, but certainly not the last time in one's heart. Jai Baba.